How's your car looking? Showing its age? Faded paint? Dents? Dings? Don't worry. Maaco is here to help. They're the experts in affordable paint jobs and light collision repairs, helping you keep your car looking its best without breaking the bank. With Maaco's national reach and community focus, you're not just getting top-notch service. You're actually getting a partner you can trust. Visit your local Maaco today and see how they can refresh your ride. Go in, get the free estimate, and the expert technicians will handle the rest. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
The Epstein list, we've heard that term for literally decades now. Who's on it? What's on it? What is it exactly? Is it a flight log? Is it a black book? Is it a big old list that somebody had going, oh, well, you were with her and you picked out the cherry whipped cream and for some reason a cockatoo as well. I don't know why you wanted the cockatoo in there, but that I have is blackmail against you. What is the list? That's the big question. The government now saying there is no list. Okay. Joining me to discuss, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. I thought you might be able to bring some insight into this topic.
Oh, my gosh. You know, so for everyone paying attention, when Tony sent me this, that we're covering the Epstein, I'm like, oh, my gosh, we're going in the dark, dark realm of the world.
Yeah.
And the reason why my initial reaction was that, Tony, is because this is really, really challenging for people on both sides. And I mean both sides because Epstein's an individual that, because of this alleged list, could take down people on either side of your political aisle.
Yeah.
And when that happens, you get a ton of confirmation bias. You get a ton of thoughts of conspiracy theories. There's a lot of noise we have to muddle through on this one. So my initial take on this was, because actually my son, he contacted me right after this list came out too, or knowledge that there's no list, right?
Yeah.
And he goes, can you believe there's no list? And I'm like, okay. And he's a pilot. And he says to me, well, there should at least be a manifest. I said, really? I said, do you have a manifest? I mean, no one, when you fly private jets, there's no manifest. No one keeps a log of who is actually on a jet. I'm a general aviation pilot. No one, that's just not done.
Okay.
There's no requirement for it. So Tony, what I initially did after I got through looking and thinking about this on multiple angles, I said, so let's go back to the origins. Who first came up and said there was a list? Because that's the first thing you have to do. If we're going to have a controversy over a list, who first proposed a list?
Yeah.
No one did. So here's what my deep search shows.
What did you find?
The official mention of a list of names associated with Epstein likely came from a federal judge's order on December 18, 2023, when Judge Loretta Preska ordered an unsealing of court documents naming over 150 individuals connected to Epstein. So that was what came out of court. What happens next is we've seen this in the media a lot. The media then places a label on things saying, 150 individuals connected to Epstein, that's a list. There was never a list. And so are there 150 individuals connected with Epstein? Yes. And so at least from my research, what I'm showing is that people then started claiming there must be a list. Because remember, those claims came from one political side against another. Mm-hmm. And so because people are trying to weaponize 150 individuals connected with Epstein. And so when you're trying to do that, people are going to use verbology to support their narrative that they're trying to have their confirmation bias around. So again, it's pure theory and speculation because I'm going to cascade this with a few other things here as well. The next thing I ask myself is, all right, so let's look at data points. Tony, you and I love data points mm-hmm. because past patterns of key behaviors are always an indicator of future ones.
Yeah.
What has been another really recent case where we would assume there would be or wished there was a list of a lot of A-listers that showed up to freak-offs?
The Diddler.
And never was there a list. There were people, mm-hmm. but there's never – in other words, why – so let's ask that question. So let's put ourselves in as horrendous as it is, but we do this from time to time. Let's put us in the shoes of Epstein
mm-hmm.
or even Diddy. To what benefit would they have or keep a list of people showing up to their place? It's incriminating, both for them and the people coming up. In other words, it's a thought process. The only place where people generally keep lists is where they want to maintain a memory. And again, if people generally don't do things proactively to blackmail, it's usually an afterthought because mm-hmm. I remember – so blackmail's come up in this thing too. It'll be a blackmail list. But when you're hosting parties, when you're hosting get-togethers, you're inviting friends, colleagues, people you think of like mind, in the forefront of your mind is not that I'm going to keep a list to blackmail. If your mind isn't saying I'm going to keep a list so I can blackmail people, so I can keep a lever of influence over them, which people generally don't do. Again, law of probability says people don't do that. For whatever reason, what would someone create an actual list? Now, are there people associated that have traveled in and out? Yes. And the other part of this, I will say, and I apologize for everyone who thinks their political figures are infallible. No one anywhere is infallible. Everyone does stupid shit. So I think if there actually was a list and people did go there, as we saw, people are named on this thing as possibly being Bill Clinton, possibly being Trump, possibly being those other people going on these things there. Okay, so we've just learned nothing because we all know this.
Mm-hmm.
So now... So that's my thought process on actually being a list that people are expecting to see. So I'm congruent with I don't think there's a list. Because here's another thing I thought of. So if there actually was a list before and there's political opponents on it, why wouldn't someone have used it already? I don't care how sealed something is. There are more leaks in government and sieves than we've seen ever.
Mm-hmm.
On both sides.
Sure.
If either side could use it as a narrative to take down a political opponent, which has happened, why wouldn't it have? Mm-hmm. All right. So that kind of debunks that to me. And the final thing is there's two more. Another thing is there are people like me inside the FBI that I can honestly tell you to this day, there's friends of mine that have been recently told and shown the door at the FBI as of a couple of weeks ago
mm-hmm.
because of who they knew inside the Bureau. to this day, until that moment, I had no idea what their political ideology was. I mean, I was so non-political. It was just mission, 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 mission. And most of the people are. And when people are like that, and people like people I know that have been booted out that have no skin in the game anymore, like no retirement like skin in the game, if they knew something and they were at high levels, there would be other leakage that came out from other people that hasn't happened. And I had one more point in there too. I've rambled enough.
You had a lot of points, but I want to go through some of that. Okay,
yeah,
let
absolutely.
Me start here.
If take it apart.
If there is no list, then what are the 150 names that were unsealed in the 2015 Guffrey versus Maxwell court documents? I mean, 150 names? I mean, seems like that's a list.
I think there's – so my guess is that when you have different – all right, so when you're doing an investigation inside the FBI, you conduct multiple interviews, and on these interviews you create, and it's been in the news multiple times before, a document called the 302, an FD-302. Yep. And these 302s are interviews, results, and all these things. And all these interviews from multiple individuals across multiple jurisdictions get pumped into a digital file, a case file online that's in the closed system of the FBI. And unless there's a requirement by a prosecutor that comes or an assistant U.S. attorney or that comes to the investigator says, create a list for me of all the individuals, there won't be a list created because there's really no reason for a list because each one of these individuals is going to be a separate interview. In other words, I mean, every investigation I've done that involved multiple interviews of multiple people, there hasn't been an instance where I actually was tasked with creating a list like a consolidated mm-hmm. list of people associated with that, unless task for, now I'm not saying it wouldn't have been task for, it might have been task for. Mm-hmm. And so let's assume, all right, so let's do, you know, this case scenario. So let's assume that the case agent was tasked with consolidating everyone ever associated with the Epstein Island onto a list. First of all, there'd have to be a reason for it, for prosecution reasons. Otherwise, you're conducting an investigation without a reason, and we don't do that, at mm-hmm. least if we're doing things legally. And so if they did create a list, it would be in a case file. And the case file is electronic. And there's going to be a host of individuals that have access to that case file, from the case agent themselves to the assistant case agent to the supervisor to the assistant special agent in charge if they need to, the SAC, multiple individuals at headquarters, our legal team, both at the field office level as well as FBI headquarters level, Department of Justice. So you have multiple levels of people that are going to have access to a digital case file. I would have thought that, again, talking about the leakage aspect of it, if it was there, there wouldn't just be – it would take a lot of people shutting up right now mm-hmm. to say it doesn't – see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's hard to do. Not impossible, but very, very hard to do.
It gets very convoluted very quick, and that's the downfall of most conspiracy theories is it would require too many people to shut up.
Yeah, that's what I'm going on this one.
But why – I mean, why use terms like this? I mean, Pam Bondi suggested a smoking gun list under review in February, and now, oh, there is no smoking gun list. It doesn't exist. Was that excitement? Was that speaking out of turn? Was that her not knowing what the hell she was talking about, just assuming everyone said there's a list, and she starts looking, there is no list, but she's making copies to hold up. I got the list! I mean, what the hell was it? Was that just a horribly stupid PR move? Another one on their part?
You know, I'm gonna go out on a limb on this one too. Yeah, I think so. I think you know, every administration when they come in has their own confirmation bias of what they think they're going to find, mm-hmm. and when you don't find it, you're sitting there eating crow. You know, it's interesting because when it came to before yesterday, Dan Bongino, the deputy for the FBI right now, he gave an interview it was a couple of weeks ago where I saw him being interviewed about the Epstein suicide aspect of it. It was really interesting watching him talk about it because he looked really disappointed and deflated that he didn't find what he was thinking he was going to find. Mm-hmm. And it was watching him non-verbally deflated because it looked like, you know, these people came in very excited that they're going to uncover all these things for American people because they bought into a conspiracy theory by the other administration to hide all this.
Yeah.
And when I'm watching, at least when I watched Bongino's a couple of weeks ago, look very disappointed that he didn't find what he was looking for. Now, granted, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. It means I believe he didn't find what he was looking for. I think Bondi, same thing. I think she was expecting to find something because of hearsay, because of social media, because of all the, because, boy, you know, a great book I read in the last couple months by Noah Harari, the guy who wrote Sapiens and Homo Deus, he wrote Nexus. And we've talked about this one before a bit. Just because you have more information doesn't mean it's better information.
Sure.
What he talks about in the book is the fact that, and I mean, Robert Greene talks about it again in Laws of Human Nature. When you keep consuming the same narrative and it keeps cascading on top of it itself, it starts to become truth for everyone paying attention. And I think that's what Bondi probably got caught up. Again, pure hypothesis, but I think these individuals got caught up into the hypothesis that they believe that we're going to find a lot of misdeeds. And when they actually did the digging, it's not as bad as they thought it was going to be. In other words, the FBI wasn't as corrupt as they thought it was. It wasn't as, you know, people weren't hiding stuff as bad as they thought they were. Were there individuals like any organization that went left of straight? Yeah. And they're gone now. And they're overreacting in some areas. So I'm just not a conspiracy guy in most cases.
Yeah.
Do they exist? Yeah. But I just because both sides had the opportunity to release stuff on the other side and no one's been able to do it, to me says, again, I'll just break it down to that.
Well,
both sides want to release something that they couldn't release because I don't think there's anything there.
Well, I feel like there's one of two things. There's either nothing there, like you're saying, or it's too hot for both sides.
Yeah.
It's not, there's no one that's going to benefit here. Because the question, I mean, the meme or whatever that I've been seeing out there and people's reaction is, well, if there was something on it, why didn't Biden release it if Trump was on it? Okay, that's a decent argument. Well, why is there suddenly not a list now, too, when Trump's it's in his hands, supposedly? And I think it goes beyond the individual who may want to use it as a political tool to release it. If I were to go down the conspiracy route and go, why did Biden not ever release it? Because there was too many Democrats on there that there was too much pressure not to, or people in higher places, that simply it wasn't going to happen. I think the same thing's happening on the Republican side, where there's too many Republicans on it, or there's too many people. Take the politics out of it. There's too many people in higher places that are not even in Congress that are on this list, and there will be severe repercussions should this thing come out. Or there's nothing. It's like either end of world, shattered, you know, scorched earth scenario if it comes out, or it's like, and
I agree. I think you're spot on, Tony. I think either there's no list or there's too many people made stupid mistakes. It's one or the other. And at the end of the day, you know, would we be shocked by either?
No.
Our expectations of people that are in leadership positions right now is so low that you're not shocked by anything anymore.
That's what I was going to say. Would we be shocked at all?
No.
If this list came out, I mean, if this thing came out 10, 15 years ago, I think it would have had a bigger impact. If this thing comes out tomorrow, let's say, oh, whoops, we found the list, and it comes out and there's just all sorts of names on there, people, you know, big people in power, names that as otherwise, you know, flawless, trusted, and oh God, like, I'm sure it would be a bit of a shift again. Like, I didn't, you know, it's like realizing Bill Cosby's a predator. But I don't know that is end of the world type territory. I think, you know, I don't even know that a lot of people, if they were on the list, would even step down if they were named on this thing, because it would just be another piece in the echo chamber of people who want to believe that people that are on that list if they did bad things, they'll believe they did bad things. Or they will take it the other way and they'll believe, well, no, They're on the list, but they were just there for some other purpose. Kind of the way they do now with what has rumored to be out there about the flight log and all of that with Trump on it or Bill Clinton on it and things of that nature. People at the end of the day are still going to believe what they want to believe. Damn the list.
I think the thing that matters the most, at least from my optic, is I don't care about a list because who cares unless there it can be tied and we can save and rescue people and take down structures and institutions, organizations that traffic in children. Because adults doing stupid. I mean, look at what Diddy got away with. And look what Diddy was accused of doing, but he's found innocent of, is a better way to put it, right?
Sure.
And I think this is such a similar situation just because he was accused of trafficking, and there's been people that were underage for Epstein, And so unless that list can reveal how these individuals were tied to trafficking and supporting the trafficking of children, which is going to be a stretch. All right, so these people went to the Epstein Island. Okay, they're leches. Mm-hmm. Okay, we thought they were leches anyway.
Yeah.
What's new?
Let me ask you this, and it's specifically on a counterintelligence end of things. I mean, there's been speculation about blackmail, that the list raised concerns about national security, given who could be on it, Epstein ties to figures like Prince Andrew, fears of compromised leaders. That could be a big thing on this list. So from a counterintelligent perspective, I mean, how would the FBI assess the risk of a figure like Epstein maintaining a blackmail list, even if it's unproven?
So it's a great question. And as you're even saying it, I'm thinking to myself, it's kind of like what James Comey purported he was trying to do when he let Donald Trump know in his first term that there was a Steele dossier, which was wrong.
Yeah.
But he's letting know because he's letting know, hey, a foreign government might try to use this as a lever of influence against you. And so there's that aspect of it. But blackmail and levers of influence like that only are effective if the individual that they're used against think it's a big deal. And so here's what I mean in the counterintelligence world, you're always assessing these levers of influence over our public leaders, our policymakers, so you can try to thwart them, so you can let the leader know about them, so you can mitigate them before they happen, so that it doesn't compromise national security of the United States. I actually had a case like this that we actually had. There was a Russian diplomat at the United Nations that I was trying to recruit. Mm-hmm. And he had, this is just a great example of this. He had a son here that was an overstay. And so he's illegally here in the country because he's an overstay. And I thought, wow, what a great lever of influence. So I'm assuming he loves his son. I'm assuming he doesn't want some political fallout of having his son as an illegal alien here in the United States. So I had a source of mine approach this diplomat, without saying me involved or anything like that, and say to him, hey, it looks like you have a problem here. With your son as an overstay. I actually have a friend who's in the United States government. He can make this problem go away with you if you're willing to have a conversation with him. You know what the diplomat said?
What?
What else is new? Didn't care.
Yeah.
And you know what happens when someone doesn't care? It's no longer a lever of influence. And so here's a plus side to all this if you're thinking in the world of national security. It's my long story for this.
Yeah.
And that is, because we've been so, as a society, inoculated against our politicians doing really garbage crap like this, it's no longer a lever of influence against them if it's exposed. Mm-hmm. So see what I mean? So if someone was to come out, look at all the stuff Donald Trump's been accused of doing.
Sure.
Do you think there's a lever of influence out there that would actually impact decisions or policies he's making?
Yeah, exactly.
So you assess it and you assess its impact. Mm-hmm. You assess whether it's actually a lever or not. And the biggest thing you do also you try to run it to ground truth. Mm-hmm. You know, is this hearsay? Is it real? You task sources. You try to find ground truth. And that's what they didn't do in the Steele dossier when they put that together, is they didn't run the hypothesis that was put out there down to ground truth with confirmed, reputable, confident human sources. And mm-hmm. so that's why that spun out of control. And that's a lot of reason why we are where we are today on this spectrum. Yeah, it's a big muddle puddle, isn't it?
It is, and it's one where, like, no matter how much there's push or discussion of this, it's just like, this is never going to do any good. It's never going to come out. If somebody doesn't want it to come out, that's in that level of power. But the reason I still lean far more into conspiracy is just watching the behavior of people. And I felt like Trump's reaction to it the other day when he was in that cabinet meeting, and I think it was Pam Bondi that was starting to speak. Maybe I'm wrong on who that was.
Right.
And then he interrupts. Are we still talking? I don't do a good Trump. Are we still talking about Jeffrey Epstein? Of course we are. Well, that's old. It's like a parent coming into the room. Are you guys still talking about cupcakes? Oh. We're gonna have ice cream cake later from Dairy Queen. It was so pandering and belittling, I think, to the intelligence of human beings that, oh, you just saying, why would we be talking about this? Let's move on. I mean, it was insane, like so many things. But it was just that to me says there is a list and your ass is on it.
Okay. So I'm with you on this. The behaviors that have a spike. So remember, so let's assess, you know, move politics aside. Let's assess Trump. It was weird for him not to talk about something because you bring up any topic and he'll go on and on and on. Best thing ever. I mean, so see what I mean? So yeah, I totally agree. That was a spike, Tony. And so, but here's what, I'm going to go on top of your conjecture.
Sure.
So you said it, to you, that was indicative that there actually is a list.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, because I'm going to hold to, I'm not thinking there's necessary, a list has been defined.
Maybe not per se list, but there's information that you know damn well you don't want to get out there.
Yeah, so I'm with that. Yeah. I think there's more to this than the public knows that they don't want to share. So I'm definitely down that road. But when it comes to the granularity of is where's the list of 150 people? Maybe, but I think there's definitely more that they're not sharing because you're right. Why else move on so fast when he actually will pontificate for hours on end about absolutely everything?
Maybe we should call it data and not a list, you know?
I love it.
Where's the Jeffrey Epstein data? Because that exists.
There's more data points of what happened that we don't know of.
Because it's like, you know, sometimes, you know, especially like liars and narcissistic type people, they'll play word salad games. And well, you didn't say that specifically. You said list. So you're referring to this list, and that list doesn't exist. But this chart over here, this flow chart.
Which is exactly what I'm doing. Yeah. I'm doing that exactly. I was like, you didn't say list. It's exactly. Not a list, but there's more there.
So, I mean, that may very well be just exactly what's going on. It's like, well, you didn't call it a list, so how would I know? It's just playing fast and loose with the term.
Right.
So I imagine something like that is going on. But
I agree.
Again,
that I agree. Yep.
Nonetheless, another thing that the public looks at and goes, huh? Come on.
See, and that to me, when this thing hit and this thing broke, that's what hit me out of everything. The existence of a list didn't bother me. All these things didn't bother me. What I saw was, yet again, loss of trust and faith in an institution that we need to trust in order to protect our national security and our civil rights. And, you know, so half the country lost it under the last administration because of the way the other side was covering it.
Mm-hmm.
And now it just flipped again.
Yeah, it did. The thing that then it comes back to again is now we suddenly have another tape. Now we have this other video that is missing a minute, but that's just how the camera works. So look, nothing to see here. And maybe it is how the camera works, but for the love of God, it looks really weird. And it doesn't really show much of anything. It shows his head as he's walking to his cell. Right. Okay, you added more mystery and nothing really of value to this. The bigger question is, why did you have no working cameras on that cell? You have one of the most infamous, famous, you know, prisoners at this moment in time in the U.S., and nobody's paying attention. Guards are literally able to take breaks and not keep their eye on this guy, and he's able to kill himself. That, again, it's just an insane story. I mean, I could see him killing himself. I could, to a level of, you know, if you don't do it yourself, we are going to come in and find a way to do it for you because of who's on this list. Or, you know, I mean, essentially, is that suicide, though? If you know, that is what, how he killed himself, what was the reasoning? Was it because he really wanted to, or because, you know, it was going to be something else if not? I don't know the answer to that. I don't think we ever will, and I think there's a reason we never will.
I agree with you, Tony. This one is so difficult and challenging because the data points, I mean, understanding how inept government organizations and institutions can be. I can understand all the rationale they gave about how X, Y, and Z happened, how he could have killed himself because they weren't watching him, because of cameras not working. Understanding how things are broken and not working and people being lazy, not doing their jobs. I totally see that. I saw it every day.
Yeah.
So that doesn't surprise me. But at the same time, it begs that question. Well, high profile guy, why wouldn't they have given him more resources? People been on their toes and all that.
Yeah.
And at the same time, now we look at the behavior of Epstein.
Yeah.
From everything I've read and understood, it's a spike for him to even entertain the thought of committing suicide. Yeah. Because people in his life are saying he wasn't even entertaining it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or so, see what I mean? So that behavior itself. So let's move away from the ineptitude. Let's just move on to Epstein himself. It doesn't quite make sense. It's a big spike in behavior of what you would have expected unless someone was bumping him off. Because see what I mean? So it's so all over the place, which means we don't have all the facts.
And let me ask this. Like, when investigating something like this, because the idea of a conspiracy would require so many people to be in on this. And I don't think you can pull that off. So when you have investigators, I mean, when you have leaders in the FBI coming out and speaking and saying, no, there is no list. People who otherwise, you know, I think are surprised by this. I don't know that it's them sitting there going, okay, well, we got the orders to cover this up. I just don't think they ever got the list. Like, like they never even got the information to consider. So they can't say exists because they never saw it. It's like it's being stopped somewhere way up here before it even gets to the FBI, before it gets to the investigators. So for them to say there is no list, they probably are speaking the truth of what they actually have in front of them. I don't think they're sitting there going, got to keep this secret. I don't think that would be something anyone would be capable of for a long period of time.
Guaranteed. And matter of fact, you know, I mean, I wasn't high ranking in the FBI, but I was at headquarters for a while, and what I just went through with you all about how I'd assess this from a managerial and executive level is like, all right, so they're talking about us having this list or not having a list. Glenn, let's go to ground truth. Where did this list start? Exactly what we did. Mm-hmm. And so what generally goes on inside, you know, public affairs and public image and stuff like that in institutions, organizations like the Bureau is once you figure out whether it's truth or not truth that people want information on, in other words, if it's pure conjecture, there's nothing to comment on.
Mm-hmm.
It's hearsay. And first of all, the Bureau doesn't comment on cases anyway.
Sure.
But the second thing they don't do is they don't make a public statement on hearsay, because then all of a sudden, if people are making a public statement on hearsay, on what social media is saying, you're going to be overwhelmed with constant chatter of having to diffuse shit people make up.
Yeah.
Because, in other words, I think they believed it was something made up, this list. That's why there's no comment on it. Because once you open that Pandora's box, they're going to comment on everything.
If the current head of the FBI says there's no list and he's never seen the list, then if there is a list, who's holding that back? Who's higher than that that has the strings to make sure they don't have that to even consider in any sort of investigation because it never gets to them?
So he did a good job when I saw him on this interview a couple of weeks ago, and I can see both Bongino, Patel kind of going through his machinations of trying to understand how to find things in the FBI because people don't understand. You'd think you could actually walk into a room and see what you need to see because there's a room that that's marked, you know.
Jeffrey Epstein's list of craziness. Yeah,
yes,
yeah, here
yes,
it is.
The Epstein case.
It's right
it's
on that file. We just went to the card catalog and found the shelf.
So basically, here's what it would look like. So say I was still in the FBI now, working in the out of the Richmond office like I did before I retired in the Fredericksburg office here. Generally, when big cases like this happen or big request comes in, because I've responded to many of these, what happens is an all bureau email goes out. In that email that goes out from the headquarters, from the legal division, it'll say, a task has been put out. We need to have any information, both from confidential human sources, interviews, and cases you conducted that relate to this. Here's, you need to have this submitted to FBI headquarters through your supervisor, whatever it is, by such and such a date. That goes out to all field divisions across the bureau. And you have to respond, and I'll tell you, they cancel leave, they cancel everything to get people to respond to these inquests that come out. And so that's how it then gets all filtered in, it gets synthesized down, because investigations, there's going to be a single point of failure success with that one case agent in the middle, but there's tons of spokes all over the bureau, subcases, other sources, everything that's opened up to support that one investigative thing. So in other words, the case agent that is in charge of the case right here might not necessarily know all the nooks and crannies way out here on the other side of the country that an interview has been conducted, the nuances of that interview, or maybe the case agent was too lazy, didn't upload that interview. Or maybe there's like, you know what? I don't want to be involved in this crap because it's going to end my career. I'm just going to toss this and pretend it didn't happen. I'm not saying that's what happened because that'd be very rare and unusual, but there's so many people involved in investigation when it happens, it's very difficult, one, to rally it all together into a comprehensive thing that an executive five levels up from that case agent can then get access to and know exactly what they're looking at. Because like I said, there might be 150 people that are associated with the Epstein thing, as was indicated before by the judge, but that was gleaned by maybe 150 different interviews across the country that said, hey, I think I saw this guy show up on Epstein Island. That happened in, you know, maybe an investigator in San Juan. Then they had someone in Las Vegas say they interviewed someone else, and they said, you know, I think I saw, not in firsthand knowledge, but I think I saw such and such there at such and such a date. So that's a data point. So in other words, you have multiple data points from all over the country, from multiple interviews, that they then have to collect together what was firsthand knowledge, what's thirdhand knowledge, what's hearsay, what's been verified, where the sources came from. So see what I mean?
Yeah.
It can get very complicated very rapidly. And for one executive to say definitively, here's the list, I'm not saying it's not, but that's what goes into even the idea of compiling a list.
At the same point, would it not really just take one agent to be compromised if they have a very big piece of evidence, a big piece of data that they're going to be bringing to this, this chart that may, you know, implicate people. If that one person, somebody got to them, I don't know who, but somebody with the interest of that person's name not coming out into the investigation. I mean, then you don't have to go to the head investigator to the top of any of this. You just have to get to the one person who may have the piece of that puzzle that they're going to add to the bigger picture. And if that person can be stopped, well, then that you solve that problem.
That's challenging. And I'll tell you why that's challenging. When I first came in the Bureau, it would have been less challenging. When I first came in the Bureau, everything was done on paper files. And when it's on paper file, it's a lot more limited access to those things. And we had a system that was in place, but it was less user-friendly. But as by the time I retired, everything was automated. Everything was uploaded. Everything's scanned. Everything's put in. Everything is uploaded. And In order to have restricted access to that case, you actually had to get higher level approvals to have restricted access. And to have only one case agent to have access to a case file without oversight from a supervisor, without oversight from headquarters, without oversight from legal, I don't know how you could.
So not really, yeah.
Okay. And also at a high level type interview, so at any time you're going to be interviewing, matter of fact, here's a great example. A good friend of mine ran leak investigations that I worked with, and he actually did leak investigations because I'm just south of DC. We did leak investigations out of the Pentagon. And he's interviewing high level officials in the Pentagon. This is a number of years ago of Secretary of Defense. And when you're doing those kind of high level interviews, you think just a case agent's going to those, you know, lowly guy like me on these interviews? No, he actually had another case agent went with him, and someone from FBI headquarters, an executive, had to show up for that interview as well. So you had at least three FBI people in that room, as well as the individual being interviewed and someone from his staff as well. So there's so many. The intent is always to have all these checks and balances put in place to keep from something like that from happening. Is it possible? Yes, but it takes a huge effort to do something like that. The example of it going sideways is Pete Strzok, the infamous Pete Strzok at FBI headquarters, the assistant director for counterintelligence. What he was accused of doing was creating a file at headquarters for an investigation against Trump. That's kind of in layman's terms. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you do that. Files inside the FBI, investigations at the FBI, can only really be started at the field office level. They're managed and oversight by headquarters, but headquarters doesn't have an investigative arm. So there's no reason to have investigations based at a headquarters that can be controlled from one central hub. They're always going to be controlled in the field in oversight and the oversight from FBI headquarters. So everyone along that chain has all the access. So those are very, very – now, granted, there was investigations we did on the counterintelligence side, like the Trump thing would have been, very high level, very compartmentalized. I mean, we hand-walked files over to DOJ all the time that were not uploaded in the normal way. But there's always more than just one or two people involved in something like that. I've never known a case, and I've worked really super high-level ones at that same level. And it's hard to imagine that could happen.
Yeah.
It's very hard to imagine. As much as people want to believe the conspiracy on that side, and I'm with you, there was more to this because of Trump's reaction and everything in there. There's more to it than we're seeing. I'm not quite sure what it is, though.
I think the big question now is, I mean, list whatever it's anyone wants to call it, just data of that fact that there was a lot of people. I mean, look, they indicted Ghislaine Maxwell, you know, for trafficking. Well, who did she traffic? Because we have no list.
Yes.
So that's a big question. You have victims that are still alive out there, some who are not, that are probably wondering, along with a lot of other people, okay, the government has seen the accusations against a lot of big people in this. You have this list. Why aren't you doing anything? Yes, Epstein is dead. These victims are still alive. Is it because Epstein can't be there to back any of this up anymore or flip? And because if you just stay silent on this, really nothing will happen to these people because they have the influence and the power and we don't want to disrupt that. There clearly is data here that shows people were being trafficked to high power people and it is being that information is being stopped by the government from coming out. Why?
That is the real crime here, Tony. That's where side I'm on. You and I are always about the victims. And I don't know why that's not being looked at more. Or maybe it is and we just don't know it. You know,
there's nothing, then there's nothing. But if there's
I'm with you. Why are we not focusing on the victims of this? Because like you said, there's still victims out there that were traumatized by this, that were trafficked supposedly by this. And they're going to have a story. How come we haven't heard any of those stories? I'm with you on that one. Because I don't care about the list if it doesn't do anything on who was there. But if the victims can then identify people, that's what we should be really taking a look at investigating. Yeah. And why isn't that being done? So I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. There's a lot of questions. I mean, this will go on until everybody's dead, I'm sure. And then our grandchildren will look back going, oh, here's what really happened. Wouldn't it be fun if they knew now?
Isn't it like just like they know about JFK, right?
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, well, maybe I think we'll maybe get that at some point. Maybe
we're getting it. It's leakage. Maybe, they're trying.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that we'll even see that one.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Today we are diving headfirst in one of the world's most controversial legal mysteries of the last decade. And, you know, so supposedly we just solved it. I don't know how we solved it, but it's been solved. Jeffrey Epstein, the client list. For years, this has been referenced in headlines, courtrooms, conspiracy circles alike, government agencies talking it. Basically, everybody stating it's there. It exists in some way, shape, or form. Believed by many to hold the names of powerful individuals tied to Epstein's trafficking network. But now, in that stunning, magical twist, the U.S. government says it never existed. Was it ever real? Was it buried? Or was it public fed a myth? Joining us to break it all down is defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis, bringing his legal insight into what's fact, what's fiction, and what the justice system may never want us to see. Eric, let's start here. Now the government's claiming no Epstein list, the client list doesn't exist, never happened. Is it legally plausible that this thing truly never existed?
You know, it's a little hard to say. You know, whether Epstein had sort of created his own list, some sort of little black book that he had that the government got, that is, of course, disputed. You know, whether the government received information and created their own list, sort of synthesized evidence from different investigations and put together something for themselves, that is also disputed. It seems unusual that just no one would know any other participants or players in this sort of decades-long sex trafficking ring.
Well, I think we need to define, I mean, what is the list? I mean, that's, I think, a big thing, too. Is the list some list that he has that he had in a black book of taking notes of all of the people? Is it just names of people that were in his black book? Is it a flight log of people coming to and from the island and how long they were there? Is it literally a blackmail list of so-and-so was with so-and-so and so-and-so and their pet golden retriever, which makes it really freaky and weird, list that he can then you know, go off on people with. When you hear the list, how have you always interpreted?
You know, in my experience, a criminal who is engaging in decades-long criminal activity like sex trafficking, they're not necessarily going to have like a handwritten list on some, you know, paper at home that says, hey, person number one is this guy, person number two is this gal. That seems pretty unusual. I doubt that it exists in that kind of a form. That being said, throughout the numerous investigations and court cases involving Jeffrey Epstein and affiliates, Ghislaine Maxwell, namely as one of them, the government certainly received information about alleged other participants and possibly accomplices. And so in my appraisal, that's more what the list could be, is sort of the government's synthesis of different evidence and who was involved allegedly in these misdeeds.
Yeah, I hear you there. I've always taken it as like a flight log. So look, we know that exists. There's no disputing a flight log exists. Why don't we have that? I mean, if this is the list to go to the, if that's how I thought of the list as, it's like, okay, well, who was on the plane? Were they there for like a day? Were they there for a week? I think that would be very telling as to what went on now that we know what went on that island. But I guess, you know, is the government playing loose with the words here, really, of just like the list? Oh, you meant that list, this other list. And oh, we thought you meant that. Like, I don't know, because this seems a little bizarre because they're not even defining what the list even is exactly.
Yeah, you know, when certain politicians and administrations want to use it to their benefit, they're all gung-ho about talking about the list. But yeah, then when they're pressed on it, the details are kind of scarce. You know, what I think is that there are flight logs, there are certainly texts, emails, different communications. And my apprehension is the government put that together and said, hey, here's sort of a master document that discusses Jeffrey Epstein and everything that went on and other folks involved. It incorporates like a flight list, text messages, emails, witness testimony, necessarily that kind of thing. And I'm not aware of any law that would prevent the government from disclosing that.
It's why would they not want to disclose it, I think, is the bigger question, and why we're all sitting here wondering what is going on. I mean, could this list have been sealed under protective order or a grand jury secrecy? I mean, and even if so, I mean, it would still exist, but would the government have to recognize its existence if that were the case?
You know, I'm not aware of any legal requirement for the government to tell the truth, and they sometimes don't. Even if it was sort of under seal or under protective order, that wouldn't be forever. It wouldn't be indefinite. And it wouldn't give the government grounds to say it actually doesn't exist. I think if the government was being truthful, they would have to say, hey, it does exist, but it is under sort of a protective order. But that wouldn't exist forever. There's no legal mechanism by which you can say, hey, keep this a secret forever.
Well, completely. And depending on what kind of log or list this is and who's on it is going to play a big part in if it ever actually comes out. What sort of incentive does the government have to even put this thing out, especially if it has a lot of people's names on it? I mean, obviously there's the let's protect people that have been abused, but Epstein's dead. And you just have a list of people who came and went from that island. And, you know, unless you got proof of something they did, it's like going to a Diddy party. I mean, it's just like, yeah, I was there. There's pictures, but you can't prove I did anything. I mean, is this really almost like that, but with less evidence?
That's kind of my take on it as well. And in terms of incentives, you know, governmental transparency, a lot of politicians have campaigned on this and in fact said, hey, we're going to give transparency to the people. Cash Patel, director of the FBI, had talked about that even in his judicial confirmation hearings, our Senate confirmation hearings. And so, you know, there's a transparency issue, but there's also, you know, we want to protect alleged victims and such, but I think that could be done while still disclosing some information in which the public has an interest.
Yeah, I mean, I don't honestly know, I mean, how much the government is truly interested in protecting any of the victims in this. I mean, considering looking at what we've seen, Ms. Guffrey the other day died, you know, and that could have, there was a lot of factors, you know, supposedly at play there. But, you know, it's another person who had information, who was very outspoken, who disappeared, or didn't really just kind of went off into her own world and seemingly had a very hard time doing that. So I don't know how much, you know, obviously on the surface, that's what the public would like. But when it comes to protecting all of these human beings who have so much power, who may have been involved in this, that's a scary prospect of what's the bigger importance here in terms of continuity, maybe, of government. How does a prosecutor decide whether to charge the powerful third parties in this? I mean, the DOJ said no uncharged individuals had sufficient evidence against them. I mean, that's obviously for them to judge, but if the public ever saw a list of the evidence there, that may be up for argument.
Yeah, you know, I question the government's representation on that. In terms of charging decisions, really what a prosecutor looks at is, hey, is there an applicable criminal charge? Do I have sufficient evidence to bring the charge? So the threshold for that is probable cause. It's a low standard. It's pretty easy to meet probable cause. But the prosecutor also has to, you know, decide, hey, can I ultimately prove this at trial? Do I have a reasonable belief that I can do that? And then lastly, are there any sort of policy considerations for whom we are potentially charging? But we got to make sure we're not doing this on a selective basis where, hey, you know, this guy is buddies with a big politician, so we're not going to charge him. And this guy I don't like, so we are going to charge him. Those considerations cannot come into play.
Is that what makes this?
Not.
I mean, well, should not, sure. But is that what makes this maybe so difficult? Of if you started picking and choosing who you're going to charge on this thing, the public's going to. What's the whole damn list? You can't just say, well, this one's on there, but no, we can't tell you who else is, because that gets to be very, very cherry picking. I mean, they shouldn't do that. They can't technically do that, but they sure would do that, I would imagine. But maybe it's easier just to say there is no list, so they don't have to deal with that, who else is on this thing, fiasco that would ensue, do you think?
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely think that at this point, the administration is trying to kind of keep it quiet. You know, Pam Bondi, the attorney general, came in guns ablaze, and she said, hey, we're going to be transparent. This is Epstein release one. And she released these binders to these influencers. And lo and behold, it was pretty underwhelming. It was a lot of stuff that the public already had. In fact, almost all of it had already been publicly disclosed. And so now they've done an about face where they're kind of like saying, hey, there's no list. There's not really much else we're going to give you. And so what's the reason for that 180?
Well, what's the reason too? I mean, I found it very interesting where they've been talking about this list forever and they were all so proud. And the one made the cover sheet and then put a bunch of blank pages behind it. Look, we all have a list. And there was no list that they were holding up for everyone. But the fact that they were talking about having a list, we got the list, it's on my desk, the list, and now they're walking it back. And look, I'm not being political here, but then you have Trump jumping in that cabinet room conversation going, you guys are still asking about Jeffrey Epstein? Like, of course people are. That's so old news. Like, yeah, because you're on the fucking list. And you have Elon Musk saying he's on the list. You know, their former, you know, the former buddies there. And yeah, I mean, it seems very convenient. This damn thing is just suddenly poof up in smoke and never existed. Seems like kind of a crazy thing to say. I think I might stick with, I'm just not going to release it. But for it to be non-existent, I mean, are we going to see somebody, is this going to come back up? What's going to happen from here? Are people going to dig? Can anyone reveal the existence of this list?
You know, if it happens, I think it would probably have to be someone who is on the inside or formerly on the inside. And so, as you mentioned, Elon Musk claims to have some kind of knowledge about additional information regarding the Jeffrey Epstein investigation that has not been disclosed and that has been arguably, according to some, withheld by the government. And so, you know, there has to be more information that has been disclosed. I've reviewed what's been disclosed. And just in criminal investigations, we're talking about federal resources. We're talking about more money than God. All these investigators, there's got to be witness statements. There's got to be photos, interviews, perhaps video, all of which, or most of which, the public has not seen.
Well, this sounds just like Diddy. I mean, but this obviously happened before Diddy. They have all this stuff, all this material. And then when it comes time to play a game, suddenly that person disappeared and it's not quite as strong as we thought it was, or for some reason we're not bringing the case that we claim exists. Is it them overstepping and overstating what they have? That doesn't usually seem to be how they handle things. They usually are going to state if they have it, they're going to come in with it, but now that doesn't exist. I mean, that's, yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense in terms of that case or this case. When it came, push came to shove, it seemed a lot of people are being protected here. And that's what I'm wondering about. There was a 2008 non-prosecution agreement, a shield of sorts for co-conspirators. Is that a shield for co-conspirators? Essentially, Epstein's original plea deal gave immunity to any potential co-conspirators. I don't know how strong that is or how ironclad that would be, but could that effectively have really ended efforts to prosecute others? So even if there is a list, what does it matter if that was part of the Epstein deal?
You know, it does appear that there were measures taken to shield not only Epstein, but also some of his alleged affiliates. But, you know, there is the dual sovereignty doctrine saying that both the federal government and local jurisdictions, including state, including potentially municipal jurisdictions, can still look into matters, can still conduct investigations, they'll bring charges even when one of those entities has provided immunity. And so that wouldn't prevent other governmental entities, law enforcement entities, from doing investigations. And I'll note, Tony, that usually when we're talking about sex assault, especially sex assault on a minor, there are not statute of limitations issues that come into play with that, at least in most jurisdictions. So it's not like it's too old to look into. It can still be looked into, and there's a question on everyone's mind as to why it's not.
Exactly, because there's some pretty big names on there. Virginia Guffrey, she's the one who just died. She named Prince Andrew, Alan Dershowitz. It's powerful testimony, but not always enough for a conviction. I mean, what sort of corroboration would be needed to move victim testimony from allegation to prosecution on, you know, some of these people? I mean, Dershowitz is still out there, and the allegation has been there forever. He, of course, has denied it. And there's a lot of other people out there who have accusations against them, too, never, ever been charged. But if you got someone saying, look, this the logs, the records of them being there just don't exist, even though they do, you're going against the government on that one. And I don't know how you're going to really get anywhere at that point.
Yeah, Tony, sometimes the tragedy with sex assault cases is that it happens behind closed doors and the perpetrators have taken measures to conceal what happened. And so just an alleged victim's statement that was some sexual misconduct is probably not enough. You know, if there were photographs proving that the individual was there in the vicinity at the time, if there was video, if there was corroborating testimony from other alleged victims or even workers at a place at which these alleged sex assaults were happening, those could get you past the threshold to file a charge and proceed with a prosecution. But that's the thing, is that someone just coming forward and saying this happened oftentimes is not enough in the legal context.
Yeah, well, look at Diddy's. Look at Cassie and her testimony. Look at all that. And they still said, yeah, this is kind of like a domestic matter. Why didn't Ghislaine Maxwell's trial reveal the client list? You know, why didn't we find out more out of all of that fiasco?
You know, I think that was by design. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
But, you know, in such a trial, it would make sense to bolster one's case to be able to show, hey, Ghislaine Maxwell, you facilitated sex assault on a minor, and you did it with these people, with person one, with person two, with person three, with person four. And we have evidence regarding that. We have documentary evidence, witness testimony, that kind of thing. That would be a strong way to present that case. That's not really how it was presented. It was presented in very, you know, the parameters, the scope of the presentation was rather limited, rather narrow. And again, the question is why? You know, is it to protect these rich and powerful people? And if so, what's the incentive behind protecting them? Why should we be doing that?
Well, exactly. Why? I mean, and I don't know if it just means that I think the fear a lot of people have is, well, a lot of people in super high places were involved in this. I guess my question today is, and is anyone going to be surprised? I mean, is this, if we found out tomorrow, there's this huge list of names of people, big, big people, and on both sides. I'm not just going to say it's all Republican or all Democrat or whatever. Let's say the president's on it. Let's say a bunch of Democrats are on it, like high rank, like just across the board, tons of people. At this day and age, are we going to be shocked? I mean, is it going to be the shock that it would have been 10 years ago? 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. Today, if it happens, are people going to resign? Are people just going to deny it and move on? Because that seems to be what a lot of people do, especially when you don't really have, you're not going to have video, you're not going to have pictures, you're going to have text on a page. And all people have to do is say, well, that's not real, that's fake, that's false, and we move on. At the end of the day, if we do get this list, is anyone ever going to be satisfied with it being legitimate?
It's a great question. I think in our modern day and age, that folks would not be overly surprised to see what you've been describing. And then, you know, for the government, if they were to disclose such information, there'd be a lot of pressure on them then to, hey, do we go after, let's say there are, you know, 20 high-level politicians, entertainers, whatever, just hypothetically. Then there's a lot of pressure to prosecute or to take some legal action against these folks. That would be a Herculean effort, especially if we're talking about incidents that happened, you know, more than a decade ago. We're talking about defendants who have more money than God and they can resist these charges. And so I wonder if the government just said, gosh, you know, if we release this, our next step is going to be so difficult and problematic and perhaps unsuccessful, that we don't want to go down towards the end of that road. We just don't want to start on that path by releasing this list.
Are they screwing up even more by now talking about, here's a video we're going to release, and they released some security camera that has a minute of footage missing. Oh, that's how it always does it. Nothing to see here. That's normal. And just expecting that public, cool. That sounds legit. And it doesn't really show anything. I'm surprised. Like, why are we seeing this now? You said your camera wasn't working to begin with anyhow. Now suddenly you have this little video over here that shows something or nothing. And they're just, and the hell bent approach on this, that it was suicide at the end of the day. That's what is, despite all of the evidence to the contrary, we have no camera, we have no guard, on a most high profile person in custody at that moment in time. Yep, it was suicide and no questions asked. They have a very big credibility problem right now. Or do we have a very big conspiracy problem in our public, where we are far more apt to not believe things that we just feel are kind of ridiculous considering the circumstances? Or is it a credibility? What's your thought? Because I guess it really could go either way.
Tony, I think we've got both of those problems. I think for one, with the advent of social media and sort of online investigators, some of whom are pretty darn savvy, I think a lot of folks aren't taking things at face value anymore, and they're looking into it for themselves. And so that's driving this. On top of that, perhaps the government just doesn't have all of the stuff that they or that the public thinks they might have. And, I think that's fueled a little bit by the government's sensationalism in the beginning, saying, hey, we're going to be transparent. We're going to show you. We're going to get to the bottom of all this corruption.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, they might not have it. And the public saying, hey, what the heck? We want to see this. And now their ears are perked too, and their expectations are unmet.
That's what I wonder about some of this. And in no way am I trying to downplay Epstein or Diddy or anything like that. But I do wonder if the sensationalism, if we in our minds as a public get this appetite and this image of, wow, this is going to be super, super crazy. And then at the end of the day, it's not good, but it's not, it's not to the level that everybody thinks it is. And I don't know how that could be in this case, considering all of the people who've come forward and all of the disturbing stories of Epstein, that it couldn't be to that level. But Is this somewhat of an overblown case where we are expecting more than actually exists, and now we're just not getting it because it's not out there, or because we're getting too close to the center of the flame, right, where the gas is coming out and it's super, super hot?
I think the Diddy case is a decent analog for this issue. When that case began, there was all this hype that the prosecutor did a press release. There was sensationalism. We had the expectation there'd be like Caligula-esque, Roman orgies with, sex slaves and yeah, drugs and guns and all this stuff. And then when we got to the case, it was the federal case. It was a handful of threesomes, which were not at all what we expected. And so I think that there is sort of this driver in the media, in politics, and in society in general that are hyping up our expectations when the reality might be a little less shiny.
A little more tame than maybe expected. Or, like I said, maybe we're getting too close to the flame. And I wonder if these two cases are different, Diddy and Epstein. If one was more overhyped than reality is, and if one is just the sun and no one can get close enough to it to truly tell what the hell actually happened on that Jeffrey Epstein Island all those years ago.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.